Ready to go. All
right, I am rolling.
All right, well, thank you so much for
coming.
You said you had some notes yourself. I would love to hear them. Just start off, what do you think about Gen Z politics?
Yeah. Let me pull up my notes real quick. I'll put these away when I'm actually, like, talking.
No, absolutely, take your time.
I did have some notes on this. I think the first thing I would mention is that the gender gap in American politics is nothing new. The first time that we saw the gender gap emerge statistically was 1980. In part, that was because a lot of male voters were particularly drawn to Ronald Reagan conservatism. The two parties diverged on issues like abortion, and they also took different stances on issues like the Equal Rights Amendment. So I think the first thing I would like to do is lay out that context, that since 1980, we have seen a gender gap where women are more likely than men to vote for the Democratic Party. Now, it's not a massive gap. So we're not talking like 80% of women vote for the Democratic Party and 80% of men vote for the Republican Party. We're not talking that wide of a gap, but it is a gap nevertheless. And I think the striking thing to me is we've seen that gap in every major election since 1980. So it's a consistent pattern in American politics. Another potentially related gap, and you know, this may come up in your story, not only do we see the gender gap in voter preference, but we also see a gender gap in voter turnout, where women have been a bit more likely than men to turn out to vote. Again, it's not a massive gap, but consistently we do see a difference of a couple percentage points between the voter turnout rate of women and the voter turnout rate of men. There could be any number of explanations, and that's kind of, you know, beyond, out of my lane a little bit to talk about, you know, what the reasons might be. But I think that's the general context. So when we're talking about the Gen Z gender gap, which is a very important topic, we're talking about it in the context of a long-standing pattern in American politics. But there are some unique aspects of the Gen Z gender divide that I think are worth discussing, and that maybe could be a bit unique when we compare the Gen Z gender gap to other eras in American politics or other years in American politics. When I was researching this, the explanation that popped out to me the most is abortion and the aftermath of the Dobbs ruling that overturned Roe versus Wade. When we think about abortion, there wasn't a ton of activity on that front since Roe versus Wade and then the follow-up ruling, which was Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And I think that was in the early 1990s. So for a long time, we were kind of wondering if and when the Supreme Court was going to give Roe versus Wade another look. And it finally happened under the Biden administration, during the Biden administration. That's seen as one of the reasons that Democrats were able to avoid catastrophic losses in the 2022 midterm election, that women were particularly mobilized as a result of the Dobbs ruling that overturned the Roe versus Wade ruling. Now, the Dobbs ruling might have had a particular impact on younger female voters because they're coming of age at a time when there is significant turmoil on the issue of abortion. And when we see younger female voters rank their issue priorities, the issue of abortion tends to be pretty close to the top of the list, perhaps at the top of the list. We don't see that same prioritization for male voters. Now, many male voters do pay close attention to the issue of abortion. They did pay close attention to the Dobbs ruling. And many male voters have pretty liberal views on abortion. But it's just not the same priority for lots of male voters on average that it is for female voters. And so if I were to pick out, to me, the most obvious explanation for the gender gap in Gen Z voters, it would be the aftermath of the Dobbs ruling and the resulting gap between young men and young women in just how much they prioritize the issue of abortion. But there are other reasons as well.
Yeah, no, that's actually interesting that you picked that out. One of my questions was going to be, when I've been looking into this story, a lot of the framing seems to be on Gen Z men.
Yes.
Why are they behind? Why are they, they're not getting degrees as much as the women, they're
absolutely
not getting jobs as much as the women, stuff like that. Why do you think that's the frame? Do you have a sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I think about young men, there's a book that had a lot of impact on my thinking. It's called Of Boys and Men by Richard Reeves. And he's emerged as a leading scholar of young, you know, young men. And what he points out is not only are women making significant gains in education and employment, but men are actually going backwards on those metrics. So we're seeing a widening divide in educational attainment and employment outcomes because women are advancing and men are actually falling backwards. And I do think that that is part of the story. It might not be the full story, but I think there's a role for the educational and employment situations of young men where they were perhaps drawn to Donald Trump's message of affordability and economic prosperity because lots of young men feel like they face an uncertain economic future. And they perhaps were drawn to the candidate who they felt had the most compelling message on the economy.
But do you think the issue of the economy, do you think that is something that is, obviously that doesn't affect just men, but do you think it's particularly unique to men? Does it affect them more?
I would go back to that point about prioritization. I think both men and women, I think both young men and young women care deeply about economic conditions. However, young women are putting more of a priority on abortion. So that's up the list, competing with the economy as a major issue concern. For men, it really is the economy at the top of the list, and abortion is down the list. So for women, there are a lot of priorities that are up there with abortion. For men, abortion ranks down the list, with the economy kind of by itself at the top of the list. And I think that's why young women were drawn to Kamala Harris, because Kamala Harris had a significant focus on the issue of abortion, which was compelling to voters who care more about abortion and have more liberal attitudes on abortion. But I agree that a lot of the pop culture commentary has been focused on what's going on with young men. And I think there is a sense of urgency within the Democratic Party to try to figure out why they lost so much ground with young men in the 2024 presidential election and trying to figure out how the party can come up with a more compelling message and a more compelling policy platform that might help reverse those losses.
Yeah, tell me more a little bit about that, because I've, in my research, I have been seeing that there's a sentiment among men that they feel pushed out of the Democratic Party, that
yeah,
they're not feeling really welcomed into that space. Do you think that's true? Do you think that is something that is a problem within the left?
Yeah, and there could be a couple explanations for that. I think, to me, the explanation for the voting behavior of young men that has gained the most attraction is the so-called manosphere, with podcast influencers such as Joe Rogan, Theo Von, Andrew Schultz, people like Andrew Tate, who advance a self-improvement message. They advance a message of masculinity, really embracing masculinity. And some Democrats are honestly not entirely comfortable with the full-on embrace of masculinity that we see in the so-called manosphere. There's lots of hot takes out there about wokeism and if that is harming Democrats with young men. I think the jury is still out on that. I think the jury is still out on all of this, by the way. Like, You know, another explanation that popped up to me is the algorithmic world in which Gen Z people live, where if young women have curated feeds that speak more to women's issues, while young men have curated feeds that speak more to, you know, what we would often think of as like masculine issues, then that could push the two genders further apart and cause them to be more drawn to either party, you know, but more polarized, I think, is kind of the word that I'm searching for there. Pete Buttigieg had a really memorable quote about this, where he said that Joe Rogan, Theo Vaughn, Andrew Schultz, and the rest of the manosphere aren't overtly political, but so his theory, which I think there's something to it, people aren't watching Joe Rogan or listening to Joe Rogan or listening to Theo Vaughn because they crave political content. I think the young men who are drawn to those programs are looking for entertainment. They're looking for self-improvement content. They're looking for comedy. And politics finds them there rather than them seeking out politics. So I think JD Vance being on Joe Rogan recently is a good example of that, where, I mean, like a lot of Joe Rogan's guests have nothing to do with politics. Like a lot of Theo Vaughn's guests have nothing to do with politics, but some of them do. And one thing that I noticed during the 2024 campaign is that Donald Trump and JD Vance made what seemed like countless appearances on podcasts that have a significant male audience, particularly a young male audience. So perhaps it was the issue positions, perhaps it was the persona of Donald Trump, but also I think the Republican ticket made a much more concerted effort to be in the media spaces that young men are drawn to, where Kamala Harris was on, I think memorably to me, was on the Call Her Daddy podcast with Alex Cooper, which has a significant young female audience. And so I think Donald Trump on Joe Rogan versus Kamala Harris on Call Her Daddy and Alex Cooper is emblematic of how the two sides were thinking about that new media podcast space in the 2024 campaign.
Yeah, and you know, going back to that 2024 campaign,
Yeah.
obviously, I think that's where a lot of this conversation about the
Yes.
Gen Z gender divide came up. Do you see that as something that's going to happen again this midterms? Or is it gotten worse, do you think? Do you think it's gotten better?
Yeah, and you know, one thing that just came to mind for potentially for your story is that UW La Crosse swung heavily to the right in the 2024 election. I don't think we're at all unique in that, but you know, I think one thing, if you kind of want to do a data dive for the story, is to look at the voting patterns of the UW campuses. And I think what you'll find is that there was a pretty significant shift towards Donald Trump compared to like 2020. But that is the question. Like, was 2024 a one-off in gender polarization, or is it the sign of things to come? Now, there is an argument for this being a durable shift, and that argument is that people's formative political years tend to have long-lasting impacts. When I'm teaching this in my classes, I always like to use the example of the New Deal, how people who were young during the Great Depression, people who were teenagers and in their early 20s during the Great Depression, many of them became lifelong Democrats because they felt that Roosevelt was getting the job done in trying to respond to the Great Depression. And that had not just an effect on them during Roosevelt's presidency, but well beyond that, because it shaped their impression of the Democratic Party as a whole and shaped the Democratic Party brand for decades to come. The other example that I like to use with my students is the Reagan Revolution of the 1980s, how many young people who came of political age during the 1980s are still voting Republican because those formative years had such a profound impact on them in drawing them to a conservative ideology. So the argument in favor of this being a durable thing in politics, the argument in favor of this being a durable trend in politics is that people's formative political years can have long-lasting effects. The habits and the preferences and the views that people develop during their teens and 20s can affect them well beyond those ages. And I think for Republicans, that's extremely promising because, you know, I think there are several mistaken views, I think, of young voters. I think the left had, I think there was a false sense of security on the left about, I think there was a false sense of security on the left about them being able to win young voters indefinitely, that it was bound to happen, that young voters would be drawn to the Democratic Party, that young voters would be liberal, and that they wouldn't really have to do much to try to attract young voters, to put the work in, to craft a compelling message to young voters. And then on the right, I think there had been a real, I think when I heard the rhetoric among some on the right about young voters, there seemed to be almost a fatalism, like they're doomed because young voters can't possibly vote conservative. Like it's unthinkable that they would be drawn to the Republican Party. But it turns out that those assumptions were significant simplifications of how young people vote. Young people are often not significantly attached to either political party. As people age, they become more attached because they develop more durable preferences and they develop habits. But young people, just because they haven't been alive that much or voting for that long, have not developed durable preferences, have not developed habits of how they vote. So the young vote is completely up for grabs. And I think both sides are starting to realize that, certainly in the aftermath of the 2024 election.
Yeah, no, one of the things that I found in my research is that apparently there's this huge independent block among Gen Z. What do you make sense of that? Is that just young people not being attached to a party yet? Is that the sign of people being dissatisfied with the parties?
Yeah, I do think there is widespread dissatisfaction among young voters with both parties. And my word of caution to the Republican Party about this trend with young men is that it's not really a trend. It's one election. And young men are not overwhelmingly becoming conservative. Like, we're not seeing young men self-identify in droves as conservative. Now, they could potentially do that as they develop more concrete preferences and as they get into the habit of voting and as they follow politics more. But, and that makes me wonder, like, okay, if young men were drawn to Donald Trump, but they're not overwhelmingly becoming conservative, does that mean that it was based on the momentary economic conditions of the election? Does it mean that they were drawn to the personality of Donald Trump and the toughness and the combativeness that he demonstrated? I mean, like, when I think about that, I think about how Trump makes these grand entrances into UFC events and how those are events that young men really like to watch. And he's almost kind of the star of the show in those events. And I think it's emblematic of the strategy of Donald Trump. There was something else I was just going to mention. I mean, I think the other thing I would have to mention is the Charlie Kirk factor and Turning Point USA. You know, when I think about this sense of fatalism on the right about young people inevitably being liberal and the sense that there's no hope in even trying to appeal to young people. Charlie Kirk did not have that level of assumption. Charlie Kirk, I think one thing that set Charlie Kirk apart from a lot of people on the right is he treated the Gen Z vote as up for grabs. And he treated the Gen Z vote as highly persuadable, that he could show up on college campuses, that he could make his arguments and win over young people. And that's not a sentiment that everyone on the right had, but it is a sentiment that Charlie Kirk had. And I think it's one thing that made him particularly influential, because there is that sense that, college students are bound to be liberal, young people are bound to be liberal, and I think I'm not in a position to evaluate exactly how many votes Turning Point USA might have converted or their effect on voter turnout, but what I can say is Turning Point USA fundamentally believed that Gen Z is persuadable, that Gen Z can be won over to the Republican Party. And I think that gave that organization and Charlie Kirk tremendous influence.
Do you think the stance of Turning Point USA has changed after his assassination?
Yeah, I think the future of Turning Point USA remains to be seen, because Charlie Kirk's power of personality was a major driving force of that movement. I mean, he made countless viral videos, viral TikToks. He understood the media ecosystem of Gen Z, and I think that made him powerful. He understood how to make viral moments. He understood how you could pack a lot of content into 30 seconds, 45 seconds, the exact type of way that Gen Z consumes media. So, I think Turning Point USA is part of a broader story of how to package media for young people. And I think Democrats are playing a little bit of catch up on that. The older forms of media are not dead. A successful campaign has to do door knocking. A successful campaign has to do TV ads, particularly a statewide campaign or a competitive congressional race. But that's not going to work to reach younger voters. For a candidate to make a successful outreach to younger voters, they have to have a digital media strategy. And I think that's a work in progress for a lot of candidates. I think it's a work in progress for the Democratic Party. And I think that one of the interesting questions that Democrats have asked, and it's not the right question: who will be the Joe Rogan of the left? That's the wrong question, because Joe Rogan is not first and foremost a political figure. Now, he's, I think, friendly to a lot of conservative causes, but he also had a very enthusiastic interview with Bernie Sanders, with James Tallarico. So Rogan is not a political creature in the way that a lot of Democrats think of him as. And I think that's part of the mind shift. Like, Joe Rogan is a cultural figure rather than a political figure. So if Democrats are looking for their version of Joe Rogan, I'm not sure that they're going to be successful, because Joe Rogan is not a political figure first and foremost. Going back to that quote that I recall from Pete Buttigieg, he said, young men are looking for self-improvement tips. They're looking for, young men are looking for self-improvement tips. They're looking for comedy. They're looking for which protein powder to buy. And politics finds them. And I just think that's the perfect way to view it. Like, a lot of young people are not seeking out politics, but politics finds them in their media ecosystem.
Yeah, and going back to what you said about the Democratic Party just kind of assuming that they're going to win the youth vote.
Right.
I'm a young person.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look around at the world. We have had 6 members of Congress die this term.
Yeah, yeah.
The Republican Party, we don't know the Democratic candidate, but the Republican candidate in the governor's race is 68.
Yeah.
We've had however many presidents born in 1946.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a boomer's world, and I'm just living in it. How do you think that affects the youth vote?
Yeah, I think in a couple ways. Political science research shows that lots of voters are drawn to people who look like them. Now, that could be any number of aspects of someone's identity. It could be their race, it could be their gender, and I think it could be their age, too. And I think the age issue is one that had been overlooked for a long time within my field and in the political world more generally. But I think in the aftermath of Joe Biden's presidency and with high-profile issues like multiple members of Congress dying in office, the current situation with Mitch McConnell, things that just grab people's attention and call attention to the issue of age. I think that's a very real issue these days in politics. And again, I think, you know, maybe it wasn't such a high profile issue when you had folks like Barack Obama in office, who was fairly young. You know, people weren't really talking about George W. Bush's age. Bill Clinton was relatively young. Now, there were concerns about Ronald Reagan's age and particularly towards the end of his presidency. But still, that didn't stop young people from being drawn to Ronald Reagan, just as Donald Trump's advanced age is not stopping young men from being drawn to him. But I do think age is an important aspect of representation, and it's becoming more important as people pay more attention to the age of politicians. You know, on that note, when it comes to the issue of gender, you know, in terms of understanding why Gen Z men and women polarized in 2024, we could just kind of look at the obvious and say there was a female Democratic candidate and a male Republican candidate. It might just be that simple, or that could be part of the story. I'm not sure that that's a full, satisfying explanation, but I think we should at least put that on the table as a potential explanation, and how gender was communicated by both candidates during the election. How I hesitate to push that explanation too far, but we might just reach for kind of an obvious explanation like that. Sorry, what was your question?
Is that old versus young?
Old versus young. you know, that could speak to the broader economic insecurity that many young people feel. And that's why I do think that the young vote is up for grabs, because the candidates who express a clear vision on the economy, I think, are going to be well suited to pick up young voters who have justified concerns about buying a house someday and affording healthcare, affording school, having the type of job where they can live a comfortable life and start a family, dealing with healthcare costs.
I'd also have to throw into the mix like artificial intelligence, right? I mean, artificial intelligence and how, you know, I think artificial intelligence is almost insult to injury to young voters, because they had already been facing a precarious economic future with the skyrocketing cost of housing, the skyrocketing cost of healthcare and education, the challenges in getting a job that pays people the type of wage to live a comfortable life. Now you throw AI into the mix, and that adds even more uncertainty about their economic future due to the potential for AI to be disruptive to the economy, to be disruptive to the labor market, to be disruptive to all aspects of society. So I think that, you know, I mean,
I mean, for your story, I mean, one interesting thing to note would be, and it's just this video, these videos are just etched in my mind, like mentions of AI getting booed at college commencement speeches. I mean, like, I take that seriously as a sign of where Gen Z is at on the issue of artificial intelligence. I mean, for all the talk these days about artificial intelligence being used as a tool for cheating in school, for as a substitute for learning, for all the talk these days about artificial intelligence being used for cheating in school or being used to complete schoolwork without a lot of learning happening, I don't think there's nearly enough conversation about a potential wave of negative attitudes among young voters and young people generally towards artificial intelligence.
Yeah, totally. So we've talked a lot about a lot of different issues.
Yeah.
Right, and you work with students all the time. How are you seeing these issues affect your students, and what are you saying to them about this? Like, where are their heads at?
Yeah, so I've been teaching for I've been teaching since I was 22. So I've already had quite a few years in the classroom, just because like it's kind of the only real job that I shouldn't say that, like it's the only full time job that I've ever had is teaching. I got to tell you, after the Dobbs decision, I saw students talking about abortion in a way and in an amount that I had never seen before in my teaching career and still haven't. I think that speaks to issue salience and what I talked about earlier, the prioritization of issues, which in my view as like a political scientist who hasn't personally done research on this topic, I think issue prioritization is a compelling explanation for the divergence of men and women of young age. I think it's a strong explanation, and I think that the reason I think it's a strong explanation is we have to reconcile a couple things. We have to acknowledge that many Gen Z women have liberal views on abortion. Not all of them, but lots of them do. The Dobbs decision moved that issue right up the list in priority for all young people, but women in particular. Gen Z men do not have overwhelmingly conservative positions on abortion. They don't overwhelmingly have conservative positions on much. So why were they drawn to Donald Trump? We have to look for a different explanation than Gen Z men are flocking to the conservative wing of American politics. And there's a lot of I do think, and so I think issue prioritization helps us square that circle and helps us explain how Gen Z men were drawn to Donald Trump, even if they were not flocking to the conservative end of the political spectrum.
So last question.
Yeah.
I am a student, but like, suppose I'm your student. What do you say to me about why I should get involved? What is so important about my vote in this moment?
You know, it's interesting. Political science research shows that young people are already involved, and well, in some ways. Young people often attract a lot of criticism for their low voter turnout rates, but that's true for every generation. So I think that it is fair to want Gen Z people to vote more, but we've been saying that about lots of generations preceding Gen Z. So I think it's important to be optimistic about Gen Z, because I do have lots of reasons for optimism. Yeah, they don't vote at the same rates as older people do, but that's always been true. I mean, that's always been true as long as, you know, we've had mass voting in the United States. I think part of this is being positive about Gen Z, and I do have to shout out again Charlie Kirk about this. Like, I think Charlie Kirk had a fundamentally positive view towards Gen Z, that they are open-minded, that they are open to being persuaded, and that he could persuade them. Now, again, I have to contrast him with a lot of conservatives who, it seems to me, have had more of a negative view about Gen Z, viewing them as closed-minded, viewing them as indoctrinated to a liberal perspective. Charlie Kirk didn't take that view. Lots of young conservative influencers don't take that view. So I think one positive aspect of Gen Z that I think is well worth acknowledging is that they are open to strong arguments. They are open to being persuaded by people who make a compelling case for their point of view. So I would start there, just having a positive attitude about Gen Z. The kids are all right, as they say. I think that we should be open to the idea that Gen Z has a lot going for it politically, not necessarily in whatever political attitudes it might have in whatever election is upcoming or whatever election we've had before. But I'd start there. Now, when it comes to voter turnout, so how do I reconcile the idea that Gen Z cares about the world but doesn't vote at as high rates as older people do? Lots of people in Generation Z do not view voting as the main way or even a particularly good way that they can make a difference in society. Now, many of them do vote, and I think that we've seen high voter turnout overall. I think one of the most positive aspects of recent presidential elections to me, particularly 2020 and 2024, is that we saw higher than average voter turnout. And the age groups kind of move in parallel to one another, where although Gen Z isn't to the level of boomers, it's not to the level of Gen X or millennials, it's still gone up. So I think, again, that's part of being positive about Gen Z. So I think having a positive mindset. And how would I talk to someone in Gen Z? I think I would be very open to the idea that voting is a small part of the story in American politics. Now, I like to say that, you know, people get into annoying debates about the term that best fits the American political system. Is it a democracy? Is it a republic? The term that I most like to use is a representative democracy, where it's based on representation at its core, but it's a democracy in the sense that it also relies on the participation of the people, primarily, or at least to a great extent, through voting in elections. So I think I'm open to the idea that Gen Z is skeptical about the power of the vote and isn't sure that the ballot box is a good way to make change in society. Frankly, I think there's something to be said for that argument, and I think it ought to be taken seriously. But I would also go back to the idea that representation is at the core of the American political system, whether we like it or not, whether we feel good about our representatives or not. All roads kind of lead back to representation. So I think when we look at American politics in that respect, it does mean that voting is critical, even if we look at voting as one piece of the puzzle in being a community member. The other thing that I like to emphasize to students is that the goal is to prepare them to be community members. And that does involve voting. But there's lots of things that go beyond that in being a community member. It means knowing the people you live around. It means making strong arguments to people you know and being open to their strong arguments. It means valuing freedom of speech. It means valuing an open exchange of ideas. It means understanding the Constitution. It means understanding American history. It means understanding the variety of ways that change happens in society, where elected officials are part of that, but they're not the entire story in how we see change in the political system and change in society. So with Gen Z, yes, I like to emphasize voting, but I also like to emphasize this broader idea of being a community member and understanding their role as a community member.
Absolutely, absolutely. Any final thoughts?
I feel like there was, when I was talking to, who was I talking to about this story? God, I can't remember. It was someone I was talking to about your story.
Mm-hmm.
And they raised an idea that I think is really, really important, where mm-hmm. we might need to dig into Gen Z and distinguish between the older Gen Z and the younger Gen Z. Just as in my world as a millennial, it might be worth distinguishing between older millennials and younger millennials. And the reason I do that is we might want to isolate when in someone's life they experienced a profound moment of change. And of course, with Gen Z, I'm talking about the pandemic. And I think that that has to be part of the story. Now, I am hesitant to make grand conclusions about the long-lasting effects of the pandemic on how people think about politics and how they vote. But I think it's going to be part of the story. And I think it may be worth distinguishing between the older Gen Z and the younger Gen Z, because formative years matter, and the pandemic hit at somewhat different points in Gen Z's formative years. Just like for, you know, millennials, this is not a great comparison, but the financial crisis of 2007-2008, older millennials and younger millennials might have been, or I mean not might, older millennials and younger millennials were just at different points of their development and different points of their passage into adulthood when the financial crisis hit. And I think that that's part of the story of the millennial vote, just like the pandemic is going to be part of the story of the Gen Z vote. I mean, I go back to the Great Depression, right? Like, catastrophes and disasters and crises don't just matter in the moment. They are sticky. They have long-lasting effects on how people view the world and how they view government institutions. So I'm not ready to make a concrete prediction about how the pandemic will influence Gen Z.
I bet it did influence.
It might influence Jay-Z. Like,